Dissolution by Stefan Molyneux, freedomain.com/donate. Chapter 11. Shane rolled over, dreaming of giant insects buzzing through his hair. It was 2 p.m. He awoke with a start. His phone was buzzing. He stared at the screen. Satan was calling. That was his label for his ex. His heart pounding, he gingerly touched the phone, almost expecting it to be radioactive, molten, sulfurous. In the vast emptiness of his existence, his newer friends were dropped along with the drugs. His older friends found him too depressing to hang out with. Regina beckoned like an ancient siren. Shane worked indifferently, sorting donations at the Salvation Army, fending off the uncomprehending pity of his co-workers who roundly mocked his amateur status as an addict of less than 12 months' duration. Through missing teeth, rheumy eyes, and strange scars under scant or greasy hair, their haunted eyes shone like million-year-old sinners scorning a new arrival to hell. "Once an addict, always an addict," they chanted, proud of their self-defining, self-slaughtering labels. They used to cut themselves with knives. Now they cut themselves with slashing syllables. They were empty. Most of them had been horribly neglected, many horribly abused, and they steadfastly refused to abandon the steaming definition of addict that had been branded into them by their torturers. One man showed him the burn scars on his back from scalding water. A woman showed him piercings in places he didn't even know were candidates for metal. An old man spoke with a fresh bitterness utterly at odds with the ancient origin of his wounds, complaining about the older brother who introduced him to the drug scene more than half a century before and who was long dead. As they were stuck in their self-definitions, so also were they trapped in time. Emotional and spiritual growth had stopped. The moment they started to self-medicate, the masochism inflicted on them by their sadistic parents. They self-attacked viciously. To stop the lacerations, they drugged their inner parents, as if they were prisoners who could never escape but could find momentary peace by roofying the guards. Shane resisted these definitions. He hated the idea that he was to spend the rest of his life permanently haunted by an eternal devil of self-sabotage. The apparent curse was that if you stopped defining yourself as an addict, your addiction would return. You had to live with the clanking ghosts and prostrate yourself to them every morning and tend to their gray wounds and listen to their endless whispering excuses and justifications, just like Mom. Because if you moved homes or tried to drive them out, they would return to haunting not just your house anymore, but your heart, your soul, and take you over entirely. Serve addiction or become an addict. Serve the dead or become dead. These are the only options. And because Shane had vaulted out of life's generally accepted course, he was now beyond any comfortable narrative, and therefore social ease. Those with greater luck view the unlucky as inferior. It is an inevitable vanity. The tall scorn the short, the pretty roll their eyes at the plain, the intelligent mock the unintelligent. Shane could not easily explain his life, and so he had to either pretend or remain alone. He knew it was a downward spiral, but he also felt the fading of any muscles that could possibly reverse it. "What have you been up to, Shane?" What the hell could he answer? Drugs, sex, decay, dropping out, predation and paralysis. Dysfunction is the long shadow cast by evil. To acknowledge and sympathize with the broken is to see the evils of the world, which ejects us from the comfortable story of success being the light that springs from virtue. Most who are successful, money, status, power, are corrupt beyond words. The modern world is addicted to recasting lies and violence as excellence in virtue. He is rich because he is hardworking and provides great value. Actors and musicians are successful because they seal their lips about the evils of the entertainment industry. Executives are silent about the bloody machinery of state power that holds their profits aloft and their competitors at bay. Reporters serve political power with greater avidity than the lowest court toady simping for a brutal queen. Scientists are slaves to the conformist brutality of the peer review system. Tenured professors who cannot be fired are pre-selected for their ability to ponderously lie in support of current propaganda. Salesmen lie for money. Politicians dangle hope before the desperate masses and then conceal the threats they receive after winning office, ending up as slaves to the shadowy enemies of the people, who can never be clearly identified. And people strain to stay sane by blindly ignoring the evils all around them. They are in a war, but pretend to be barbecuing in a syrupy summertime of peace and tranquility. And when the silent shots explode someone's head or leg, they rigidly smile and step over the writhing or spastic body, waiting for it to sink into the soil of their indifference, so they can ask if anyone wants more coleslaw. There are no lions. And to serve this delusion, the lions never roar, move silently, and mostly strike the isolated. They exist as vague bundles of streaking brown, bloody fur, deep in the peripheral vision of those who refuse to ever turn their heads. And those who survive the attacks, who could show the scars laced with predatory hair, are isolated and ignored. Lions are a conspiracy theory. The greatest predators are those who cover up for the real predators. Take my brother, sure. Just don't show yourself to me. The lions, the devils, stride the world unmolested, certain of the knowledge that they will never be named by the sane, for the simple reason that those who name them are always called insane, or evil, even better. Only the paranoid fear predators. Having been preyed upon, Shane was now crippled by the isolating knowledge that predators exist and attack the unprotected. All that has to happen is that the predator is named, and then they flee. They approach and attack only those who are unprotected, who are ringed by those who refuse to see predators, mostly because they are predators themselves. Shane was paralyzed because he still did not truly understand that his family had isolated him, which is why Regina so easily struck him down. John, Jean, and Robert should have protected Shane, but they had all exploited him in their own ways. John through contempt, Jean through an avalanche of words, Robert through the superiority he aped from his father. How can we protect someone we have exploited? And so Shane was unprotected. And that lack of protection, that prior exploitation, invited Regina in, lashed him down, tenderized him and closed his eyes, and disabled his fight-or-flight animal self-protections. And through Regina came the entire underworld of second-class predators. The druggies, the dealers, the nihilists and raging communists. The sex addicts whose every grin and gesture stank of rank seduction. The verbal abusers who only opened their mouths to slash and wound with razor tongues, infecting others with the gummy bacteria of permanent definitions. Loser, weirdo, psycho, selfish, asshole. The pathetic and vain were down there too, in the gutter and sewage. Those who were so trashy that they could only feel superior to the worst dregs of the dying city. The pretend ambitious were there too, hiding their scant art and crowing about their glorious futures only to those trembling on the precipice of death. They had all been stretched and snapped on the early racks of sadistic parents and teachers and priests. They all found strength and power only in the management of their illness, which meant that any sustainable health triggered panics of alien incompetence in them. A doctor makes his living in the management of illness and injury. Their lives sustained themselves the same way. Thus a beaten boy becomes a boxer. As a child, he has no power to stop the beatings. All he can do, the only power he has, is to manage his reactions to being beaten. Without being beaten, he has no power or control at all. The anxiety triggered by a peaceful life, I have nothing to manage, nothing to control, I'm out of control, like my abusive parents, drives him to the gym, to the ring, to beat and be beaten, to feel the sweet relief of familiarity and the power of managing his rage, pain, and fear. Abuse is a language. When English speakers move to an alien country, they join the expat community, merging with relief among those who speak the same tongue. Chinatown, Little Italy, immigrants cling to the familiar, to the culture they know. It is the same with abuse. Wherever victims go, they find other victims who speak the same language, and a diaspora of the broken takes its mournful limbo place in the heart of any city. Broken souls bound together by the invisible razor threads of familiar bloody language and endless self-attack. Shane had leapt out of that world, but he was back in the world that gave it birth. His home, his room, his escape from his family that flowered into an escape from reality. And now, Satan was calling. Shane ran his nail-bitten forefinger over the tiny screen. Is hell better than limbo? Is pain better than nothing? Is being exploited better than being alone? Shane answered the call. Yes, he whispered. Shane? Yes. It's me, Regina. I know. There was a pause. Shane's mind was dead, receptive, inert. She cleared her throat. How are you? I'm good. I don't really know how to answer that. How are you?
Terrible.
His heart leapt slightly. His mouth was suddenly dry.
I have so much to... Listen, I don't know how to... Can we meet up?
I don't... Shane swallowed.
I have to work.
Oh? Her tone brightened slightly.
Where are you working?
Oh, it's just sorting. There was another pause. Shane's heart was pounding. Her nails were clacking on something hard.
I'm in rehab. Have you... Are you... Yeah. We did each other some real damage, kid.
Yeah. But you started it! Shane wanted to scream. He jumped out of bed in order to control his tongue. She sighed, and he got a whiff of vague impatience.
Did you hit bottom?
No, but I saw it. Regina laughed harshly.
Well, I did, buddy. Bam! Right down. I mean, there are different bottoms, you know. Mine was getting arrested. Gives you street cred, but it's no fun, for sure. You run, you get beat. Down at Cherry Beach, phone books on his face. I was just there for the ride. I didn't even want the money. I was gaming bingo. No worries there, bud. But it all went down in Chinatown. I didn't even like the slant-eyed son of a bitch, but variety is the yellow spice of life, am I right? I was just killing time, watching the show. And he was so easy to needle, and you know how much I love that blood sport, right? And the dumb hick fought the cops when they busted his deal. Jeez, that adrenaline will be the death of me.
She laughed again.
It's all court-ordered just because I ran. Boy, they beat him bloody. And roughed me up a little too, the ungentlemanly bastards. So we were both resisting arrest. Badass. The whole stupid show, all these concerned faces, I have to nod and smile and get it. That's all. That's freaking all. Yeah, I was abused as a kid. Well, you know that, right? Played doctor with a little Mengele, a true Kevorkian. White coats and bloody buttons. She took a deep breath. Sorry, Shane, I'm totally jittery. Off everything except shitty coffee. I'm all over the map. Does this make any sense at all?
Shane was pacing his small room, three strides, then turn around.
I get the general gist. So there's this apology component, you know? Of course you know. And I guessed you were in a program, and I smiled to myself, like 20 times a day, just waiting for your call. You're so sorry, Regina, stop on your apology tour. And I got so mad that you never called. Maybe you ditched my number? Never mind, don't answer. So this sad face therapist I got, a real droopy hound dog, asked me what you had to apologize for, and I just stopped. You know, my motor mouth just fizzled. You were a sweet kid, Shane.
Her voice thickened with sorrow.
And I was a big bad witch who led you astray. Please tell me that you kept up with your art. You had real talent, a real brush. I'd hate the idea that that stopped. I never stop talking because I'm really scared of what people will say back. Like, I want you to answer, but I'm terrified that your answer will just break me in two, like my little doctor did. Do you want to say something?
I don't do art anymore.
Why not, Shane? Because of me? I made my choices. One of them was you.
No, murmured Regina.
I wasn't. I chose you, little lamb. I cooked you.
Why are you calling, if you don't mind?
To apologize, said Regina, her voice suddenly losing its insistence. You were a sweet kid, and I led you astray.
Shane swallowed dryly.
Yeah, you kinda did. And I guess you're not in school anymore. I never saw you around after I thought maybe you transferred, but I knew the truth. I know. How is life? Have you recovered?
Well, I'm not getting worse.
Are you clean?
Yes. Yeah.
That's good, Shaney. Is this a useless conversation to you? No, don't answer that either. I'm stalling. God damn it! She suddenly shouted. Why is it so hard? I'm sorry, Shane. I screwed you up. I know that. You had to pay for my little doctor. I understand that much, though I don't understand why. And my little doctor was... At least he had the excuse of being a kid. Well, he is older than me, but I was older than you.
Regina laughed self-consciously.
Probably still am. I knew better. But there was something about you, Shaney, that just drew in people like me. It was going to be me, my man, or someone else. There's no way your tender ass was ever going to get away unscathed. But I've been thinking about you.
Her voice broke again.
I did you wrong, Shaney, my little lamb. I harmed your soul, I think. Broke your trust. And I just want you to know that not all women are like me. Or that chatty Kathy who raised you. Don't lose hope, Shane. Don't give up on love. It's still within us. We can heal. I don't know how the hell, but we can.
Her voice was strengthening.
And I might still go to jail. Don't get stuck in revenge, please. I'm begging you. And you know how I hate to beg. The universe has avenged you. I spend so much time in clubs, I have like permanent tinnitus. This crazy whine of conscience and stupid choices. And my brain is half fried. You can tell, right? My gums are shot. I have to eat everything at room temperature. I've had 2 abortions, so I'm ringed by little offspring that will never grow out of their orange chicken phase. And I'm older than you, which makes me kind of evil. But I still have a long way to go, and I don't know how I'm going to make it, Shane. You have no idea what I've done, but you're still my first call. Say something.
Shane's heart bled in his chest.
Well, I hated you for a while, but I'm sorry that you're suffering now.
He laughed sadly.
Maybe that's better than what I've got.
What's that? Don't let me interrupt you.
Just nothing, really.
Your job? Total crap. Keeps me out of the ER. Just.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry.
Shane's soul was at war.
My heart is, like, totally pounding. Mine, too. I don't know what to say.
She took a deep breath.
Just tell me. Say it.
His face crumpled.
I can't. There's nothing to say.
Nothing?
Nothing. Really. Yeah, it was messed up. A dark place.
You wish you'd never met me.
I don't even know who I would be if I'd never met you.
But you're not happy.
No, I'm nothing.
I hate that. Don't do that. He laughed harshly. Don't do what? Don't do being nothing? This is the kind of maze that used to drive me nuts. You're right. You're right, Shaney. I'm sorry, but this is weird on the phone, right? Is it just me? I feel like I'm arguing with myself, just a voice in my ear. That's not healthy.
Please, meet with me. It will cure all your memories. I used to be so pretty.
You'll never be taken in by prettiness ever again, I promise you. You're still addicted to London Fox, right? My treat. As many as you want. It's part of the cure. I really want you to know that... Hang on, I have to get some water. My mouth is so dry. I'll just put you on speaker. Her voice became distant, tinny.
You still there?
Yeah.
Just 20 minutes. Even less. You can look through the window, see what an ugly mess I am, then just walk off with a spring in your step. Total victory.
I bet you still look great. You're that kind of addict.
I always preferred your look to Robert's. Oh, so preppy. Just a tiny, short meeting. A hug and closure. Or maybe we have enough in common to be friends, right?
Being an ex-addict is like the loneliest thing on the planet. Like there's no one. Am I right?
Come on, Shaney. You can pick the place.
I know, the one with the bookshelves and old cards and window nook we always used to make out in.
It's like a 5-minute drive for you, and it's a real sacrifice to me, kiddo. I lost my license 2 years ago, you know. Come on, what do you say? Please, please, please. I can be there in 45 minutes. I can put a big smile on your face. I promise you.
The afternoon sunlight slid in through his blinds. Shane had no work today and was hoping to sleep away his solitude. He felt a stirring of romantic memory at her mentioning making out in the corner sunlight of the cafe.
Yes,
he whispered.
Yes, please.
Her voice was distant.
What? Sorry, couldn't hear.
Yes. Yes. Let's meet. Wild cheers erupted through the tinny microphone, along with groans and boos. Cried Regina in exultation.
You all said there was no way I could get this loser to meet up with me. I, Regina, Queen of the Simps, have now decisively proven you wrong. You all owe me $800, nerds.
She picked up the phone. Her voice jumped in clarity deep into Shane's ear, his brain.
Come and help me spend all this money you helped me earn, Shaney love. Let's party!
Shane threw the phone away from him like a sudden serpent and sank against the wall. Against his teenage grunge band posters as Regina's tinny laughter and the cheers and boos of the damned washed over him like scalding, erasing static.